Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. Happy Friday. It has been quite a week. I've been in Las Vegas for the National Football Foundation Hall of Fame festivities. I didn't sit through the 4.5, 5-hour dinner, but I did hang out with a lot of the athletic directors and coaches and commissioners who were in town. And then there was the Learfield Sports Business Journal Collegiate Sports Forum, which was pretty interesting. All the commissioners from the Power Five leagues and a few of the Group of Five commissioners came and talked and discussed their various positions on the college football playoff and scheduling and NIL and all kinds of stuff. It was fascinating. And actually bumped into an old friend, and you're going to hear from him later in the show, Brandon Wimbush, former Notre Dame quarterback. He is now one of the co-founders of a company called Mogul, which connects athletes with companies for NIL deals. And it's pretty cool because when I met Brandon, he was a quarterback at Notre Dame. He wanted to parlay being the QB at Notre Dame and getting a Notre Dame degree into becoming a CEO, a mogul, you know, in his own right. And he's the chief athletic officer at Mogul. And my guess is he will be the CEO of something someday. He's only 24 right now, so he's got plenty of time left. But he talked about the business that he's helping create, about playing quarterback at Notre Dame, about what that means and what that's like. He talked about his old coach, Brian Kelly, going to LSU. We talked about Marcus Freeman taking over at Notre Dame, Tommy Rees remaining at Notre Dame as the OC. So really good interview with Brandon coming up. But first, let's talk a little bit about the college football playoff, because it was my first chance to in person talk to a lot of these commissioners about what is going on with the negotiations for the playoff. And I can say the negotiations for the expanded playoff, because they all made it very clear it's going to expand. The question is whether it's going to expand to 8 or to 12. My guess is 12, because the solutions for 8, it feels like they will not be able to come to a compromise. Basically, there's a camp that if you went 8, it would need to have 6 automatic qualifying bids, 2 at-larges. The other camp says if you're going to go 8, it has to be best 8. And I don't think they're going to come to an agreement on that. So I think it's going to be 12. And to be perfectly honest, 12 probably makes more sense for what they're trying to do, because all of the commissioners at this point have agreed that they'd like to sell multiple TV packages. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be to multiple networks. But as George Kliavkov from the Pac-12 put it, if they sold it to one, that one better pony up. They're going to have to pay a premium to get it all. So I doubt very seriously in the next college football playoff contract. Now, they may change the format before the contract ends, but in the next contract that begins in 2026, my guess is you will see it on multiple networks. And that's just because there's a lot more money in that for them. And I think you probably need to go to 12 to be able to split it up like that and to have more product to sell. So if I had to guess, I'd say it's probably going to go to 12. Now, how does it go to 12 is a little bit different question. There's a few little issues that need to be resolved before they decide, yes, we're going to go ahead and do this. And one of those is how many automatic qualifying bids and who gets them. 6 seems to be the number that everybody's stuck on, and everybody seems okay with that. The question is, how do you split it up? There's a contingent, and this contingent includes the SEC, the Big 12, and the Group of Five, that would prefer the top 6 ranked conference champs, which is what the proposal put forth by that subcommittee in the spring said. And that subcommittee included Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, Bob Bowlesby, commissioner of the Big 12, Craig Thompson, the commissioner of the Mountain West, and Notre Dame AD Jack Swarbrick. The Big 10, the ACC, would prefer a system where it's the 5 Power 5 conference champs automatically get a bid plus the highest ranked Group of 5 champ. Now, interestingly enough, Kliavkov from the Pac-12 says he's not necessarily tied into either one. My guess is he's aligned himself with the Big 10 and the ACC, so if it goes that way, he's probably on their side. But he says, publicly at least, that he's not one way or the other. But it's interesting talking to these guys about this, because we asked Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big 12, on Thursday, why do you need this? Your champion would have gotten in every year in a 12-team system otherwise. Remember, the Big 12 champ did not get into the playoff in 2016. The another team from the Big Ten got in 2016. Penn State was the champ. Ohio State was not the champ, but got in anyway. And then in 2018, the Big Ten champ was left out of the playoff. So, but with a 12-team system, that wouldn't have been an issue. All of those teams would have gotten in. But we asked Kevin Warren, why then is it that important that these five leagues get an automatic bid? Here's his answer.
So you can imagine from a brand protection and opportunity standpoint, if that ever happened, especially as demanding as our schedule is, it would not be only not good for our conferences, but it wouldn't be good for college football. So the naysayers who have said to me, well, Kevin, you guys are always in, you only one time in 25 years, I said, that's fine. That just reiterates the point. I just think that will help the consistency as we go forward. I'm a big believer in it, and 5+1. And that still creates, if we go to 12, it still creates, six spots for people to have an opportunity to come in from an at-large standpoint.
So Kevin Warren kind of turned around basically saying, well, if we're always going to get in, then you may as well give us the automatic bid. More interesting is the answer that Bob Bowlesby gave, because look at what's happened to the Big 12. They've lost Texas and Oklahoma. They, of all the leagues, probably need that automatic qualifying bid the most. If they were guaranteed that AQ spot, then it adds cachet to the league. It probably increases the value of their next media rights deal. So why does he not necessarily like it? Well, I asked him about that on Wednesday, and he said he remembers back in the BCS days when the commissioners of the BCS AQ conferences got hauled before Congress and were basically pilloried for being unfair and not creating an unfair system. So Bowlesby says he doesn't like to lean into left hooks, basically. He doesn't want to codify these are the five preferred conferences because he feels like that could be something that could trip them up down the road. So he's not as concerned about it, and he looks at it like, my champ would have gotten in all of these years in a 12-team system, and looks at the lineup he's got coming in with BYU and Cincinnati and Houston and UCF adding to what they have left, and he feels pretty comfortable that the champion of that league would be one of the six highest ranked.
Wouldn't the Big 12 be better off with 5+1? Yeah, probably we would. I mean, as a league in transition, sure, that would give us some surety. But, I'm confident in our ability to eat what we kill. And I think we'll play at a high level and we'll do okay under either model.
So we'll see how those guys wind up deciding what they're going to do. The deadline is approaching to do it in 2024. If they don't hit it in the next few months, it sounds like it moves on to 2025. And if that's the case, then you may as well just let this current contract run out and start anew in 2026, because that is the current 12-year deal runs through the 2025 season. So we'll see if they get it done. It doesn't feel like they're that far apart, but there are some issues that still need to be resolved. One other interesting thing that the commissioners talked about, George Kliavkoff from the Pac-12 said, basically, I'm new here. I was the president of sports and entertainment at MGM Resorts. I was not involved in college football the last 30 years. I'm new to this system. So I'm looking at this new system and saying, wait a second, you guys schedule games 12 years out, non-conference games? Why? That's incredibly stupid. I believe the word that Kliavkoff absolutely used on stage was, it's insane. And I got to agree with him. I mean, there are games that are scheduled. I'm wondering if I'm going to be retired before they get played. And he says, this is idiotic. Why do it this way? Why not do it differently? And so one of the things that he wants to do with his fellow conferences in the alliance, which would be the ACC and the Big Ten, is do non-conference scheduling and spread it throughout the season. And they create great games that would be valuable to their TV partners, valuable for season ticket packages, you name it. And so he doesn't feel like it's that far off. His thing is, let's do this right away. Basically, can we get this done by changing the schedule? And what the Pac-12 would do is they would go from 9 conference games to 8. And if they do that, then there's one game per season per team that could be scheduled somewhere else. And so he says, let's do it.
So there's two components to it. One is a longer-term component of getting out of some of our current contracts and our colleagues in the alliance getting out of some of theirs. I think the conference realignment will provide, you know, more immediate opportunities than we think, right? Because I believe the SEC is going to go to a longer conference schedule. Mm-hmm. So we have lots of games scheduled against the SEC, as does the Big Ten and the ACC, and some of those games will free up. As another example, our conference has quite a few games scheduled in the future with BYU. Mm-hmm. BYU is going to have to clear some of their schedule for the Big 12 when they join the Big 12. So I think one component of that is that you're going to be able to have some of those game contracts clear up. So that'll be great. The more obvious and immediate way to get there is for each of the conferences to free up their conference games. So much easier for the Big Ten and for us than for Jim in the ACC, because he's got 8 plus 5 against Notre Dame. But when it comes to going from 9 to 8 conference games to free up to be able to play one game against one of the other alliance partners, we're ready to do that now.
Now, to make this happen with the Big Ten, Kevin Warren and the coaches and the athletic directors in the Big Ten have to agree to go to 8 conference games as well. The question is, when will they do that? Kevin Warren, who's also new to college athletics, he came from the Minnesota Vikings. He was in the NFL. Not as gung-ho as George Kliavkoff. It sounds to me like Kevin Warren wants to wait a little bit longer.
I mean, I think, you know, something like probably, again, it depends. If you did, it's probably 23, 24. Those things take time to do from you know, scheduling standpoint. And me, one combination of being a lawyer, I'm always very cognizant of contractual relationships that you have. You need to just be very thoughtful.
If I had to guess at when Kevin Warren is angling toward, when he talks about, I'm a lawyer and I worry about existing contracts, remember, the Big Ten's television contract ends after the 2022 season. There will be a new deal in place for the 2023 season. If I had to guess, if they wanted to do something different, and remember, the Big Ten playing 9 conference games is a relatively new phenomenon. They just started doing it, I believe, in 2017. So it's not like it's this sacred trust that they'd be breaking. They initially went to more conference games because they felt like that was going to help season ticket sales and help strengthen the schedule. And actually it wound up canceling a non-conference scheduling agreement with the Pac-12 when they decided to do that. My guess is if they're going to make a change in the number of conference games, they will do it ahead of the new TV deal. So if I had to guess when something like that would start happening, I'd say it's 2023. But that said, after spending all these years with these school scheduling games 10, 12 years out, I am thrilled that they are talking about doing something. Maybe it's not next year, the year after. I can live with that. And it sounds like they're trying to create some great games. And I am all for it. If they want to play Ohio State and USC, if they want to match up Michigan and Clemson, please do it. Let's do it. Let's have some fun with this. And it can only help the sport. They're modeling it after the ACC Big Ten Challenge in basketball, and it would be spectacular. They would be scheduling the games. Basically, you'd know if you had a home game or an away game or a neutral site game, and they would match you against a team of similar ability. And so you'd get really great matchups at the top of the leagues. And so let's do it. I'm so happy that some new blood has come in, and George Kliavkoff has said, look, I'm not from here. I wasn't involved in your BS before, so I don't have to feel like it's anything important. I'm going to go ahead and say, let's do the best thing that is the most fun and would be the most entertaining. And by all means, get it done. Just get it done. We'll be right back after these words. Let's talk to Brandon Wimbush, former Notre Dame quarterback, also former UCF quarterback. Really interesting guy. He I would say he used his time at Notre Dame very wisely. He was always looking for internships and networking possibilities when he was there. And his goal was to become a leader in business. And here he is in his early 20s, and he's already doing it. So really fun conversation with him about what comes next with NIL, what comes next for Notre Dame, what Brian Kelly's going to do at LSU. Here's Here's Brandon Wimbush. All right, Brandon, last time we saw each other, you were still at Notre Dame.
Yep.
You were on your spring break working out with a bunch of other quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Jarrett Garantano, Kenny Hill.
Yeah.
Do you feel very old hearing those names?
I do feel old, but I feel more than anything, Andy, honored to be, you know, one of those names, right?
Yeah.
Chase Griffin is another, and George Whitfield,
Chase Griffin was a little, he was in high school at that point, but
right.
He'd been coming to those things since he was a little kid.
Right.
Chase Griffin, the quarterback, he's a quarterback at UCLA, future president of the United States. Am I underselling that there?
No, that's the way George puts it for Chase. I think he's on the right trajectory.
Oh, yeah.
At UCLA.
100%. 100%.
The things that he's doing there.
Well, it's interesting because you are now working with Mogul. You're one of the co-founders of Mogul, which is an exchange that connects athletes with companies that want to do NIL deals with them.
Right.
And I just when I saw your name on this when you guys first came out, I thought, oh, this is exactly what Brandon was moving toward when he was in college, because you were that guy when you were at Notre Dame, and you also transferred to UCF later. But when you were at Notre Dame, you took advantage of every Notre Dame connection you could to do internships and just network. And now you're the founder of a business in your 20s.
Yeah. I mean, it's what you wanted, right? It's like what I dreamed of. I always said I wanted to be a CEO of a company. I'm the chief athletic officer. I'm a CAO. But I never knew it would be when I was 24 years old that I would assume a position like this. And it's been a hell of a ride. Entrepreneurship has been a great experience. It's been great forming a team. We're at 12 full-time team members now. But the space, Andy, I mean,
it's
blowing up, and it's ideal for my background and my experience.
Well, that's what I imagine is athletes can probably get a hold of you and say, all right, how do I do this? What do I do?
Right.
Because that seems like the most confusing thing is this only started in July.
Right.
And nobody really knew how any of it worked.
Right.
So how do you, when you're talking to athletes, how do you explain how this works?
Yeah. I mean, this entire space is educational from the athlete side, from the brand side, from the university side. So the universities have done a better job from July 1 than they had previously leading up to July 1.
Of telling them, hey, this is coming. Yeah.
Hey, this is coming. Here's what you can, cannot do. But as you've learned here at the Sports Business Journal Forum, there's so many levels of rules and regulations that the athletes either have to abide by. So there's a lot of things that the athletes can and can't do and have to stay away from.
Mm-hmm.
So us as a platform at Mogul, we try to do our best job of educating the athletes and vetting the brands more so than anything before they enter the platform and interact with our athletes.
Because you're dealing with multiple state laws.
Right.
You're dealing with different school rules, and so you got to make sure those athletes don't run afoul of any of them. And I know you got Khalil Wilkes who played at O-line at Stanford. He's working with you guys now, and it seems like everybody who has been kind of in the system.
Yeah,
how much does that help having dealt with it from the inside?
We're founded for athletes by athletes. And myself as a former athlete, Khalil Wilkes, who you just mentioned. We poached him from Stanford. We met with Bernard Muir here, and he was a little pissed at Stanford's athletic director that we poached him, Khalil, because he's been great for us in another athlete perspective.
He got his law degree after he finished the NFL, right?
He got his law degree from University of Villanova, which is one of the most renowned law programs, and then also worked at the NCAA within their internal compliance department. So for him to be able to provide that perspective on the athlete side, but then understanding compliance, and then our number one thing is let's maintain the athlete's eligibility.
Yeah.
They can't do anything with NIL if they're not able to play on Fridays or Saturdays.
Exactly.
So that's our biggest thing, and it's been great to be able to have that source of reliability and comfortability within our team.
So what are some of your favorite deals that you've helped work out so far?
Yeah, and I think we spoke about the Darian Rencher with NBC Row, the podcast network.
Darian is the driving force at Clemson. When Trevor Lawrence Darian was the one
kind of behind him, helping him message it.
Yeah.
So Darian's been great friend of mine. But I knew this guy had a personality. I knew he was going to take full advantage of NIL. And you should speak to him and see how he's been able to do that. Multiple
one podcast
brands,
or to another,
podcasts,
absolutely.
So podcasts have been a great, and we spoke about this, a great outlet for a lot of these creative athletes.
Yeah.
to tell their stories and to connect with their authentic audiences and fans. So that one, and then we've been able to do a lot of cause for good, you know, opportunities with athletes who want to give back into their communities and do charity events like that.
That's the part I think that amazed me the most, because I had written stories over the years about different, you know, athletes trying to do things, and they would run into NCAA problems because they were trying to raise money and they couldn't use their names to do that. I was shocked at how many athletes immediately decided, all right, let's, I want to help people. I want to raise money for charity.
Yeah. Dylan Gibbons.
Right, at Florida State. Absolutely.
Dylan Gibbons, Notre Dame.
Your former teammate at Notre Dame. Yep.
Didn't facilitate it, right? We didn't facilitate it. But I think that example really set the standard for the effects and the impacts that this new name, image, and likeness opportunity can have. Kenny Pickett up at Pittsburgh.
Yep.
We're able to do stuff right now through Mogul with around the holiday season, giving back turkeys. We've been able to facilitate doing gift shopping. It's an idea I stole from Notre Dame. We would go to Myers and have 100 kids from a Boys and Girls Club and shop with them respectively. So just things like that, I think, really go a long way. And then, Andy, to be honest, you don't know what athletes are doing with their money, and they could be providing to their families back home and keeping the lights on. So it's those circumstances that I think really are the bigger, you know, opportunity here with this new name.
How much fun is it with this being so wide open?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like every day there's a new idea.
There's new ideas. I think NFTs is something that's hot.
Yeah.
So the value there and the value creation for athletes there is going to be immense. But this was a phenomenal, we're at the Sports Business Journal right now for them, and this has been a phenomenal eye-opening experience for my business partner, my team, and I on what's to come, what's to expect.
Because you get to see the commissioners and the
people who are making
the
decisions. Yeah. These are the decision makers, right? So for us to be involved and a part of this program, you know, with the big dogs, right, for lack of a better way to put it, I think is a phenomenal, you know, thing for us.
So what do you think you would have done? What would have been your NIL deals when you were Notre Dame starting quarterback? What would you have been going for?
It's a great question. I think I would have stayed aligned with what I did.
Yeah.
Internships, externships. Let's get on the internal team for a company, and let's do a creative, right? Like, let's brand something towards who I am, right?
Yeah.
Let's make this longer than just a one-off social media post. That's not what this is going to be in 3 to 5 years, Andy. This is going to be a professional development opportunity for a lot of these athletes in enduring internships and externships, summertime programs, right? Things that are going to expand way beyond just a social media.
Well, and I've been learning a lot about brand building over the last few years just in my own career, because I was a sports writer. You know, I started out as a sports writer, figured I'd write for newspapers my entire life.
Right.
Newspapers went in the dumpster, and I had to figure something out. And I've realized, thanks to social media, it was just an accident. Like, the more you can brand yourself, the better you can brand yourself, be identifiable, you know, create an audience that's reliable.
Right.
This is all stuff that I didn't learn until my 30s.
Right.
I couldn't imagine, if I could learn it in high school or college, it would put me so far ahead.
Where would you have been right now?
Yeah.
Right? Where would your 150,000 followers been?
Well, it
right
might be
now?
More than that. So,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
10 years ago. You know?
It's crazy.
But social media, though, you didn't have that to your advantage when you were in school. So the fact that these athletes have this platform and this way to connect with their audience through so many other platforms, it's been, you know, a wonderful thing.
So I've always wondered, what is it like being the starting quarterback at Notre Dame? What is the day-to-day? What does the pressure feel like?
Yeah.
Is it on your shoulders all the time that I'm the quarterback at Notre Dame?
Yeah, you know, I was happy about, Andy, we're connected with Jim Phillips, the commissioner of the ACC. His son runs track at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing that full story, full circle, mental health was one of the things that Jim had mentioned, and then other commissioners.
Kevin Warren at the Big Ten today.
The alliance that they've created, right, is the mental health aspect of it. And I think just being a quarterback at the University of Notre Dame comes with a lot of mental health stigma. And it's not a stigma, it's a fact.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure. There's 40 million Notre Dame fans across the country, and it's not just in South Bend, but there's what's the quote? I always mess up the quote, but it's the three most important positions in the world are the Pope, the Notre Dame quarterback, and Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas Cowboys coach.
Something like that.
Exactly.
So, but in your 18 years old, trying to uplift the program, an entire program.
Yeah.
But so it's obviously a privilege and you have to understand that, right?
I'm so glad that athletes have been able to start talking about this. I did a story a couple of weeks ago on Sam Hartman, the quarterback at Wake Forest, and he wanted to do it. He actually, he's the one who had the idea. And he started going to therapy about 6 months ago, and he wanted people to understand how much it had helped him, and that it's okay if you're an athlete. Like, you can talk about your feelings, you can do this stuff, and it doesn't make you weak or, you know, a lesser athlete. And so I can imagine, like, a position like that, starting quarterback at Notre Dame, starting quarterback at Alabama, you know, where everyone is just looking at you all the time.
Yeah.
That does have to mess with your head somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, 80,000 people, I get, you know, sometimes we're on the field, you don't understand it, right? I'd say I get more pressure and nervous sometimes speaking publicly, but there's so much that you have to do and on schedule and meetings and class and family and then friends, and then you want to live a social life, and then you want to network because you want to maximize the leverage that you have while you're marketable.
Yeah.
So it's all of that tied into one, and being 18 to 20 years old, you have no experience on how to manage that.
Yep.
And if you don't have a structure or a foundation, either at home or at school, and I'm happy that a lot of these commissioners have spoke about reallocating resources towards mental health.
Oh, I think it'd be huge because people don't understand. I mean, when you are 17, 18 going into that process, that's a lot.
Scary.
So
it's scary.
Now, let's talk about your mom, Heather, who is a dynamo. And I met her when I met you and was just blown away.
Yeah.
Figured, you know, this is why he's
where I'm
as impressive as he is. Yeah. But she told me a story about when you were in high school, you go to St. Peter's Prep in New Jersey, and you've got these classmates and teammates and their parents are, you know, CEOs and CFOs and doing big things. And she said that you, when you started meeting these people, you just started to pick their brains. You're like, how'd you get where you were? What do I do? How do I do this?
Yeah. I mean, I think I got to get back to that, but my curiosity factor was just, it skyrocketed once I went to prep and I saw another world. I saw another life for myself, right?
And your mom's a nurse, right?
It's no knock to my family.
Yeah.
Right, we come from Jamaica, Pittsburgh, like, you know, middle class family, like provided, had all the necessities.
Right.
But then there's another way of living, and sometimes you're not exposed to that, right? And then for me, is going to prep, is going to Notre Dame, it's just another heightened extension of that, as you know. And so you're surrounded by people who are just living a different way and a different lifestyle, and it's healthy.
Yeah, right?
It's healthy to see that and understand that, okay, I want to strive for this type of excellence.
Yeah, I mean, I your mom was a nurse. My parents were both teachers. You know, you just assume that's what everybody's like. Yeah. And I think no matter where you are on the scale, I think you probably assume everybody's like this. And then you see what it could be, and it's like, wow.
Right.
Because it was the same for me after college, where you start meeting some people and learning about this. And it is amazing how that works, but the curiosity is the key. Is asking,
willing to learn,
or you know, it's all the you know, self help gurus always say, well, you know, do your best friends make more money than you or less money than you? Yeah. Who are you hanging around? Who are you surrounding yourself with? So,
right.
But it's amazing that you kind of identified that as a, you know, as a teenager.
Yeah, I was 14 years old and understood that.
But so, you went through the transfer process.
Yep.
And that's obviously huge in college football now, because now everybody can do that one-time transfer. You did it as a graduate transfer, but what was that like for you leaving and then starting over in a new program?
So I'm surprised that, I mean, I don't want to phrase this. I think I was the second year that the portal was out. I think I transferred in 2019. I think that was the second year after the portal had been announced that it was a thing. And for me, it was a really easy process, Andy, because I was recruited out of high school so heavily.
Mm-hmm.
So the coaching connections that I had across the country, right? Ryan Day, right, when he was recruiting me from the East Coast at Boston College. Jeff Lebby, Chuck Martin from, you know, Notre Dame background, Chip Kelly at UCLA. These were guys that I had familiarity with.
Yeah.
So it was easy to have calls, make the connections. And it wasn't so much about the transfer portal. But I was lucky and I was blessed again. So guys like Spencer Rattler and Dylan Gabriel, you know, how much are they going to be in the portal? I don't know.
Yeah,
like they have connections already.
Because they were like Dylan was a freshman at UCF when you transferred. USC and Georgia had come in late on his recruitment.
Right.
So I mean, he had a bunch of people that were
hot on his trail at the end. Yeah. So, and you're right, Spencer was recruited by everybody in the country.
Right. What's it called? The crystal ball that has he landed somewhere?
Yeah. 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 So it is interesting. What was that? You said it was pretty easy. Now, how did you decide on UCF?
So I was just telling my business partner, my grandfather was passing that year, that January he passed after I transferred in December, and he's in Florida. So it's kind of a family, let's go, you know, familiarity, let's be close near to home. My mom was in Atlanta. So it was like, all right, Southeast, like, let's go play in Florida. I should have known, though, Everett Golson and Malik Zaire both transferred to Florida schools, and neither of them worked out, and then I followed suit, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, I wrote about all those deals.
Those stories.
When, when he went down to Florida State, you just assumed, all right, this will be easy.
This is a fit.
But then he gets banged up, and then the Malik thing, that through no fault of his own, walked into probably a mess that he didn't know was there.
Jeff Lebby and Josh Heupel gave me an opportunity, Andy, and I was grateful for that. And those are, you know, two great guys that are doing well coaching.
I'd say you've seen Lebby just blow up at Ole Miss, and now it looks like he may be headed to Oklahoma.
I think he is.
So what's that offense like? I mean, what can Oklahoma fans expect?
That's scary. I don't think they should expect to miss a beat at all, going from Lincoln Riley's offense to who is it? Brent
Venables.
No, it's not Brent Venables. Yeah. It was Baylor's head coach.
Oh, Art Briles. Yeah.
Art Briles. Yeah. That's the offense that...
which everybody in the Big 12 is pretty familiar with already.
Right.
So, yeah.
Coach Lebby's running, and it's very electric, and you have to have playmakers, and it's a lot of one-on-ones. It's who's going to beat who. It's best man wins, and the quarterback's going to throw for a lot of yards, as you saw with Dylan Gabriel at UCF, and as you saw with Matt Corral this past year.
Where'd you like to see Dylan land?
In a place where he's comfortable. I spoke to him right after he announced that he's transferring. He's just, you know, he wants to land where he's going to be challenged. He's going to be able to play his type of football.
Yeah.
And then obviously take that game to the next level.
It is amazing, the story of him, that Mackenzie Milton would basically just go to Josh Heupel on those Friday night dinners before the games and just say, you gotta get my guy. You gotta recruit my guy.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, the same high school, right? Same program. So. Same results.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. So let's talk about your alma mater, though.
Yeah.
Notre Dame, Brian Kelly leaves, and obviously you played for Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
So we'll start with that. What do you think Brian Kelly is going to do at LSU?
I think he's going to do what he's done. And I think it's hard to say, though, right? It's hard to say. Like, how's Marcus Freeman going to do? I don't know. He's 35, you know, guys love him. Coach Kelly, he's been coaching for 30 years. He has a great track record. So what do I think he's going to do? I think he's going to continue to win games. I think he's going to continue to be effective. I think he, per Leonard Fournette's tweet, he made a great hire in bringing back one of their running back coaches who's, like, one of their top recruiters ever.
Yep.
So starts off on a good, you know, track, I guess. So I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see, you know, the type of performance that he's going to have. He's getting paid well, so
they all are. So,
right.
And Marcus Freeman thing. Now, you didn't work with Marcus Freeman at all. He came in just last year. But when you saw the players and the way they responded to him, what did that say to you?
It said a lot. I think I understand having a players coach, right? Somebody who's very receptive to the players and their needs and adapting to the players that he has around him. So that said a lot. And then, you know, I'm really excited that Tommy Rees still assumes the offensive coordinator position, because I think that keeps the offense on the right track. And obviously the quarterback room, you know, has the same type of love that, you know, the guys have for Coach Freeman.
You went through, you know, Notre Dame went down and then came back up.
Yeah.
Seeing them where they are now as a program, how close to the ceiling are they? Can they get even better than this? Or
I can't say anything else. I think they're going to win a national championship. I believe that. I believe that all of this happened when the program was in a great position, right? This couldn't have happened at a better time for the program, for a head coach who's been there for 11 years to leave, and then for somebody else to assume the position. And the excitement around the program, I think, is more than I've ever experienced myself. So And we had a transfer quarterback, Andy. Like, who thought we would be here 11?
Notre Dame, that's right.
11-1. I don't know the last time we had a transfer quarterback. And for us to be in this position right now, you know, we had a chance to go, you know, be into the national college football playoffs, I think is phenomenal.
So with your experience now doing this with Mogul and your experience playing quarterback at Notre Dame, I'm gonna give you a chance to recruit for Notre Dame right now, but I'm legitimately curious. The power of the Notre Dame brand, plus the ability of players to create their own brand.
Yeah.
How much can those players that are they're currently on the roster at Notre Dame take advantage of that now?
Yeah, I think the sky's the limit. It's hard to put into words the value that I think Notre Dame can create for their athletes. I think Jack Swarbrick, who's a good, you know, dear friend, and I admire his work, is taking slow steps because he knows the value that's there and he wants to do it right. And he knows that this is a bigger opportunity. Again, like
well,
I said,
you have to make sure it's done right because you can't cheapen the brand.
That's Notre Dame, though. Yeah. So it's going to be a recruiting advantage 2 to 3 years from now. And I think they're going to set their athletes up, you know, right. I'm sad I missed out on the opportunity.
Oh man, you would have had. I'm just trying to imagine who you would have partnered with,
right?
Because
I was into fashion too, like finance.
Yeah, exactly. You would have had so it would have been like the you know they always put the X instead. It's never it's never it's never Nike and Dior collaborating. It's Nike X Dior.
Right.
It would have been like Balenciaga X Brandon Marshall. Marshall, another podcaster very good podcaster, but yeah, you would have
on mental health.
You would have had the Brandon Wimbush line at who was at Under Armour because
we were Under Armour.
Notre Dame was Under Armour at that point. Yeah,
that would have been sick.
That would have been
like a Cam Newton line.
Brandon can you Wimbush imagine line. What would your logo look like?
BW7. We already had it.
You had it. Okay.
We already had it. Under Armour already put one, and we just couldn't do anything.
Tell me that story.
I actually work with the lady through Mogul now, who was Under Armour's marketing director, and they came in to our facility because we were obviously they're corporate partners. We're sponsored by them, so they wanted me to use a football, an Under Armour football. Mm-hmm. Right, we were going to go from Wilson at the time to Under Armour football. They created me a logo, BW7. They wanted me to use it. Right, brand it.
Right.
As you know, to the quarterback.
This is while you're playing quarterback.
This is while we're playing. Before name, image, and likeness was a thing. But just full transparency, it just wasn't a good feel in my hand. Like, I'm a big quarterback. Mm-hmm. I'm a big how the ball feels in my hand type of guy.
Right.
I think Brady's the same way.
Yeah.
Clearly he is, right?
With the in-play gate. You don't have to talk about deflating balls.
But no, the way ball feels in the hand is mostly everything for a quarterback. And it just wasn't a fit. But the logo was so cool. And the logo was so fire. And I think it would have been a great opportunity.
That's an interesting point, though. So it wasn't right for you.
Yeah.
And when you talk to athletes now, how much do you have to advise them on, hey, don't take everything.
Right.
Because you might not want to be associated with this in two years or three years.
Yeah, you never know. And it's vice versa for the brand.
Right.
You never know when you're dealing with athletes, 18 to 22 year olds. But more so for the athletes, when I'm discussing, I mostly discuss oversaturation of your brand, not saturating your social media presence with, you know, variety.
It can't be then all ads.
Then there's just not, there's no authenticity. And as you know, Andy, and so athletes need to be specific with the brands that they want to work with and make sure that they align with their values and not just the monetary value.
There. Well, that's the thing here is, you know, we're on a podcast and this recording will have some ads inserted into it that I've done the reads for previously. And I'm always so happy when it's a company that like we've got a couple advertisers that I was using the product before they came on board.
Got it. So
and
it was
the
genuine.
Ad reads sound great because I'm
genuine.
Just saying what I said to my friends before.
Right.
Before
hey, I'm using this product every morning. And
So the shout out to Peloton and Sonos speakers. But
those are two good ones, man.
Heck yeah.
Great ones.
Heck yeah. So I was using my Peloton app this morning to push me through an interval run.
Right.
So, but that is such a big thing because I do think as young as these folks are, I mean, I would have had no clue how to handle if I'd have been, you know, a good football player, I was a terrible walk-on. So I would not have been offered any deals, but I would have had the jankiest NIL deals if I'd have been able to play. Like, I'd had the China Super Buffet.
Yeah.
I think, Gainesville, Florida didn't have a ton of, big businesses. It wasn't like, there were a ton of places, but.
Gainesville's a good spot, though, and I'll push back on you that a lot of these deals, it's top-heavy, football players, basketball players, men and women's basketball, but there are opportunity and value at the mid-tier.
Well, like in Gainesville, what I'm interested in is like volleyball.
Yeah.
Because Florida has a really good volleyball program, and so it has become a big volleyball town. And so the high schools have really good volleyball teams. So Florida's best volleyball player can probably put on a clinic now and make really good money or do private lessons because I have neighbors who have their daughters in club volleyball and they pay a fortune for this stuff.
100%.
So, I mean, it's crazy.
Imagine golf. Imagine the expensive sports,
Oh, yeah. Golf.
Hockey.
Anything that has a club aspect to it early on, baseball.
Yeah.
You can really do some good work there and probably connect with the kids better than somebody else that they could hire.
100%. That's the value out there. And that's the value for every college athlete. If you're playing collegiately, you have some type of expertise that, a high school kid's mom is looking for, right? Or a high school kid admires.
I'm curious. So I'm thinking about some of the players through the years who, you had a really big personality and were outgoing and wanted to talk to everybody. What about the Amari Cooper types who are great players, but they really would prefer just to work out and play?
Yeah.
How can you help them get a deal? How can they connect with somebody?
I don't even know if it's called ambivert, but like I can be extroverted when I want,
I'm typically
introverted.
I want to be alone sometimes. I understand that. Yep.
So like even for me, like I'm not this huge brand builder using my social media platform now. Like I could probably I should have way more following and an audience than I do. So I always think about like how can I help those athletes who are just naturally introverted and don't want to be on social media, right? And going to all these networking events.
Yeah, because Amari Cooper obviously had a huge platform as Alabama's best.
But he's probably very involved in the community and doesn't want to show it.
Absolutely.
It's like
not
a genuine thing. Yep. So I think that way is something that a lot of college athletes have taken upon. And it doesn't always have to be in the public, but there's a lot of brands that want to align with you because of your authenticity and the way that you treat people and the way that you go about your business, right? And it doesn't, again, it doesn't always have to be out in the public, but it can be in private, but you're making so much good in the world, right? Doing things that matter to you.
I'm going to get this BW7 logo back.
Can
you buy it from Under Armour, you think?
I think they would trademark it.
I think they'd sell it to you, probably.
We do a little co-licensing. That's
what Nike paid for the swoosh, right? It's like $25.
Cheap, yeah. Back in what?
In like the 70s.
Yeah, 70s, 60s. Yeah.
So, you give them like a grand or something. Be like, no, I'm
I need this, guys.
You're not gonna use it for anything else. Let me grab it.
That's a little point, though. I might go snag that.
Absolutely.
I might go snag that.
Yeah, I got a logo for this show that I didn't design, but I love it. It's a neon football helmet with a hot dog in the middle because all I do is eat. So it's perfect. But, I mean, it's so funny talking about this stuff because I'm sure when you started playing football, you were not thinking about
brand. About playing Sundays.
Yeah. But you're a good example of a player who really could have done well off the NIL stuff and did not wind up playing in the NFL for a long time. So this would have helped you kind of kickstart your life.
Like, this is why I'm so impacted by it. So I'm passionate by it. Right. Yep. Yeah, good point. Could it help me kickstart my life? Like I was really on the brink of.
I just try to think about. Let's say an athlete comes out of school with enough money for a down payment on a house.
Yeah.
How much does that change the trajectory of your life? Oh, having a down payment on a house.
I'm living with my mom.
22.
I'm living with my mom.
Exactly.
So I'm trying to save up for that.
Yes.
That down payment on a home.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And a $5,000 deal here, $10,000 deal here, even if it's like $500 and you're making that, right?
Yeah.
Like that's so powerful and goes a long way. But I think you're right. I think this is going to go a long way for college athletes.
Brandon, thank you so much. I'm very excited to see where you guys go with this. And
thanks.
First time I met you, I knew this was coming. You were going to be a mogul and now Mogul is your company. So.
Thanks so much, man. I appreciate you guys having me.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, you can listen all week. We have tons of great shows that are going to make you
a more informed and a much more entertained college football fan. You've got the Andy Staples Show. You've got Power Hour with Nicole Auerbach and Michael Felder. On Tuesdays, you've got Stars Matter with Ari Wasserman and Mitch Light as your bonus content. You've got One True Pod with Max Olson, Sam Kahn, and Jason Kersey talking Big 12 on Thursdays. You've got Football and Grits with me and David Ubben on Mondays talking SEC. What more can you ask for? As Jim Harbaugh would say, who's got it better than us? And remember, stars do matter, so hit that 5-star review button whenever you get the chance. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you on Monday.